Hey, Ed.
I have one.
You have one?
Yeah, I have one somewhere.
How are you doing?
We should come up here, huh?
That sounds like a great idea.
Good idea.
I don't mind you.
So, did anybody not get the email with the motions on that for the business meeting?
Got it.
You got it. You guys got it? You got it?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I printed a couple because if you need it.
My wife handles that.
Marcia said, I'm sure she got it, so that's the motion, and that's the budget.
Okay.
Good, thank
you.
I'll take one,
Pastor. Sure. There's the budget.
Well, your Toyota has that problem, that's mine.
Okay. So one of the motions, the first one I think, is the missions motion. That's to support Cameron and Carrie Wolford. Cameron just was here and presented his ministry and preached in the morning service. He's planted churches in Ecuador and in Costa Rica. And now he has a ministry called Servant Leaders International, and he goes and he trains the leaders of both new church plants, but also other churches, so that they can be more mature and more formed and have better success in discipling people and things like that. So he's in Nicaragua this weekend, and this is his itinerary. So giving an example, because I said, hey, I called him, I don't remember, Wednesday or something, and he said he was about to get on a plane. I said, well, do you have like an itinerary? He goes, oh, yeah. I said, well, send me the itinerary. We could pray through it, you know? So, well, he's already done with the first part. He did a marriage retreat for three churches. That was on Friday and Saturday. I'm talking about Cam Wolford, Ryan. And then today, he's preaching to a combined, Sunday worship service. I'm not sure how many churches. Tomorrow, he goes for four different churches, and he does like a leadership training for them. And then after that, I think it's on Tuesday, it looks like, he goes to a place called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Jinotega or something. And he's going to do he's going to train them on how to disciple their people. It's a church way up in the mountains in Nicaragua. So anyway, I printed these off. They're sitting on the Welcome Center.
Thank you.
But that way, you know a little bit about what he's doing right this weekend, this missionary that we're considering. Okay, so a couple things you want to make sure you got on your calendar. Starting tomorrow, we're going to do a handful of guys are going to get together in the morning and read through 1 John. And have kind of like an inductive Bible study. You know, that means inductive. It's more like, instead of like, I'm going to do more of deductive today. I'm going to get up and tell you what Daniel 2 is about. I'm going to try to engage you a little bit, but I'm pretty much going to just teach Daniel 2. Inductive is more when like somebody asks you questions about the text so that you conclude what the text is about and sort of discover it together. We're going to do that. Group of men, there's four of us so far. It's going to just be between 8 and 9 o'clock on Monday mornings, and we're going to be at the Dunkin' Donut at Haggerty and Maple at 8 o'clock. So if you want, any guys want to come, you should come. Okay, and then on the 16th, is that this Saturday? Yeah. The 16th is what are we calling it in-house? The Diffin Dinner? Is that what we're... Okay. So that's the send-off dinner for Joel and Misty this Saturday, 5 to 7. Be praying for the family. Misty came down with COVID, and she was kind of laid out on, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday. And Joel texted and said, the rest of the family's got a light cold, which is probably related to it. So I think they delayed the surgery. So I don't think we know when that's going to be. Okay, so that's Saturday, though. And if you're going to come, it would help if you RSVP'd for planning for food. So you can reach out to Laura, but also on the Friday emails, it looks like there's an RSVP link that you could click, okay? Okay, and then the next, so that's Saturday. So the next day, a week from today, is the quarterly members meeting, you know, the potluck lunch, and then the members meeting to follow. If you just came in, if you had any trouble with the email with the motions, I printed a couple of them. I've got them here if you want them, a copy of the budget as well. If you're not getting those emails, make sure you reach out to Laura and ask her about that.
Yeah. Is it just CAM and the budget?
And we're removing rights from membership because they're going somewhere else. Yeah. Yep. Those three. Okay. I think that was, did I miss anything, guys? Anything that needs to be announced that wasn't? Okay. Very good. So training in the Word on Thursday nights, that's not, if you were planning on coming this Thursday, don't, because that's over with for the semester. It doesn't indicate that in the bulletin. But we did our last training this past Thursday. So, but women's Bible study continues. I think there's two more, hon?
Yes. Yeah,
two more. That hunt was directed to my wife, in case anybody. okay, very good. Very good. Who did I take this from, Dan?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, flip open in your Bibles to Daniel chapter 2, and we'll continue looking at this really thrilling book. Daniel chapter 2. Okay. Now I remember what I don't like about this lectern. It's too pitched, so everything slides to the bottom. So when I start my lectern building company, I'm going to pitch them a little more forward. Okay. Daniel chapter 2, how do we start this? Let's think about this. About this idea. Dial in with me for a minute. The future can be scary, can it?
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty simple sentence I just gave you. The future can be scary. Just a handful of words. And how you heard that is likely a lot different than the person next to you heard that. Right? The future, you might be thinking in terms of like, I'm thinking about retiring. Do I have enough money to do that? You might think in terms of like your health. Like, I don't know. I haven't been feeling very well. And maybe that's an indicator. I don't know. And, you know, what the future holds. You might feel a relationship cooling off. And how you used to have this like really great friendship or camaraderie with like your sister or something like that. And all of a sudden it seems a little icy and you're worried about, you know, what the future of that relationship looks like. You might have this thought today, but if we backed up, you know, just a handful of days, people were really worried about the future in terms of the country and who would lead it. And even since then, I just saw a montage of different people in tears and what appeared to be very anxious, like people that looked genuinely worried about the future. Now, lay aside the fact that people like to mock those sorts of things, but people have genuine fears. We have genuine fears about the future. And what's more, if that's not bad enough, just our own subjective fears about the future,
The Bible seems to teach, the New Testament in particular, has this trajectory of teaching that seems to predict that our world that we live in is inexorably moving from bad to worse. Got a couple of verses with me today and just demonstrate that to be true. Somebody give me 2 Timothy 3:10 to 13. 2 Timothy 3:10 to 13. Just shout out if you're going to be the one reading that. This is the audience participation portion of the program. One of y'all needs to be like, that's me. Okay. Who's doing that? Okay, thank you. Whoever said that? Was that Bill? Okay, and then Matthew 24. Uh, 15 to 22. We'll do that one.
Okay.
You got time? Okay. All right, Bill, if you're there, give us 2 Timothy.
You, however, have followed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness, my persecutions and sufferings that happened to me at Antioch, at Iconium, and at Lystra, which persecutions I endured. Yet from them all the Lord rescued me. Indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. While evil people and imposters will go on from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived.
Okay, so that was so Paul essentially telling Timothy, right, he's encouraging his young protege, who's the pastor at Ephesus, who tends to be a little skittish, it seems, from things we can pick up in those letters to Timothy. Paul says, hey, listen, you have followed my ministry, my teachings, my, you know, all these different things he lists. And he finally lands on, and also you followed my, did you hear the word? Persecutions. And he lists some of them. In Iconium, and he's sort of he's walking through Acts 14. If you read Acts 14, that's where he's planted churches in modern day Turkey in these different towns, and he's, you know, he's being persecuted, like being beaten, stoned to death, dragged outside the city, left to die, all these kinds of things, and he says, "You followed me, and God's rescued me from them all." But the reality is, there was persecutions all over the place. And then he gives that, like that general truth to him, right? He says, everybody that wants to live a godly life, what's the end of it?
Will suffer persecution.
That will suffer persecution. Even, and he throws one more little, you know, descriptor there on the end. He goes, even as bad people move, or what's the word? Enemies?
Evil people.
Evil people, yeah. As evil people move from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. So it feels like there's this underlying truth that those who want to be godly are going to suffer, and it seems like it's going to get worse. He doesn't give us a full explanation of that, but we pick up that tone in those words. But what about Jesus' words in Matthew 24, Tom?
They're scary. It says, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, it has, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judah flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be a great tribulation such as not been from the beginning of the world until now.
Give us that phrase again.
let me go back. For then there will be a great tribulation such as not been from the beginning of the world until now.
Okay, that's good enough. It continues in that vein. But the idea here is that Jesus is predicting that tribulation is going to reach a fever pitch in the future. Like it's heading in that direction, or perhaps this direction. Now some in the history of the church believe that that was predictive of 70 AD and the destruction of the temple. If you read the historian Josephus's account of that, it's pretty frightening. But you have to keep in mind that prophecy always has a near fulfillment and a far away fulfillment, right? So, in other words, I'm gonna reference in my sermon today 2 Samuel chapter 7, which is the Davidic covenant, where God promises that he's going to give David a throne that will endure forever, that's going to run through his family line, right? That's partially fulfilled in Solomon, rising to the throne. And not only just simply rising to the throne, but like flourishing on the throne. Like, you know, the borders get expanded under Solomon, and there's this wonderful peace that's running through the land, and they're defeating all their enemies, and they're just wildly rich with resources in the kingdom. And so there's a near fulfillment of prophecy, but there's yet a future, because 2 Samuel chapter 7 very clearly points to the Lord Jesus Christ as the ultimate son of David that will achieve the throne. And similarly, even if you were to believe that prophecy of Jesus was pointing, that got fulfilled in AD 70, we would have to conclude that it got partially fulfilled in AD 70. That great tribulation that Jesus speaks of is yet to come in its fullness and full terror. Full terror, if I didn't say that right. I say all of that just to lean into my introduction. The future can be very scary to us. How are the people of God to respond to that reality, that universal reality, that the future can be scary? Well, Daniel chapter 2 helps us. The theme I'll put to you for this chapter is this, that access to God's wisdom about the future controls how we live in the present. Access to God's wisdom about the future. The fact that there is available to the child of God wisdom, God's wisdom about the future, that reality helps us live rightly in the present so that we live differently than the world, that we live as people of hope, that we don't live as people that cower and are frightful and shrink back, to use Hebrews language. Right, but rather we're confident of the future because our God reigns and has told us what it's going to be and has guaranteed our success, that we're on the winning team, that our future's bright despite what may happen in this world. So again, the theme, access to God's wisdom about the future controls how you live in the present. The chapter kind of breaks into two pieces and shows you the negative side of the coin and then the positive side of the coin. We start with the negative. That starts with looking at the future from Nebuchadnezzar's perspective. And then we'll flip to Daniel's perspective. So let's go ahead and read the text, Daniel chapter 2. Let me pray and then we'll read. Father in heaven, we're so grateful to you that you are... that you are our king, but more than that, you are a king that controls not just the borders or even the success of our economy, though you certainly do those things. But you control the very future that we are looking at and perhaps frightened about. We can trust in you because you are the God who knows the end from the beginning. You have created this world and created the history that we will live out. So God, help us to have faith. Meet us where we're at. Take us by the hand when we're afraid and lead us to peace and trust, we ask. Even now as we look at Daniel 2, Spirit of God, help us, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, God's word reads like this. Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I had a dream and my spirit is troubled to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, listen to this now, the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. They answered a second time and said, let the king tell his servant the dream, and we will show its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make the dream known to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time changes. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. Because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah's companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. Therefore, Daniel went in to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanter, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this, and he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. You saw, O king, and behold, a great image, this image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation. You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom and power and the might and the glory, and into whose hands he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, and the birds of heavens, making you rule over them, you are the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom, but some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with the soft clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with soft clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever, just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. A great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. A great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. Whew, that's a long text. Okay, tried to keep it moving there so we could keep the whole story kind of in our minds. You tell me. If you had to come up with what's the big problem of the text, what is it? You tell me. What's the big problem?
Knowledge of the future.
A little bit more specific. You're absolutely right. Knowledge of the future. But what do you mean? Where in the text do we see that problem?
By what they saw.
By what? Who saw?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, so Nebuchadnezzar, right? What happened with him?
A dream.
He had a dream.
He wanted to understand it.
Right. And didn't understand it. Now, this created ripple effect problems for other people. What are the other problems in the text that spring from this problem? What's that?
If you can't tell me what the dream means, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, kill who?
Wise men.
Yeah, we'll call them wise men. They got a bunch of different names, right? The wise men are going to get it. Right? Because why are they doomed?
Can't give the answer. Can't tell the king his dream?
Yeah, they can't do what the king's asking of him, right? What's the king asking of him?
Tell me my dream.
Not only what it means, anybody can do that, right? I'll tell you a dream, you tell me what it means, right? And who's to say Tom's not right? Tell me what it means. But man, if Tom tells me what my dream is before I tell him, okay, now I'm listening, right? So this is the setup. And what's the responses from the wise men?
No man can
do what you're asking. This is way too hard, right? And so that's this ripple effect problem, right? What's a related problem? Related to this one. What's here?
Death.
Death for whom?
For God's men, the wise men.
Yeah. In other words, the wise men's a big group of people, and who's in it?
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel and his friends, right? Daniel, too, is going to get it, right? Unless things change. This is the big conflict of this chapter, right? And it all revolves around being able to interpret a dream about the future, right? So can you see where I'm getting this idea, why I started with saying, like, the future can be scary, right? Okay, let's look a little bit closer here. So, as I said, chapter 2 opens with this problem. Look at verse 1. Somebody read verse 1 for us. I'll start it. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him.
Okay, what kind of person is Nebuchadnezzar? Is he kind of a mamby-pamby, you know? Is he kind of a soft-spoken, wimpy kind of guy? What kind of guy is he?
He's mean.
He is not only a king, he's an emperor. He rules over the known world, right? He commands great armies beneath him, right? He says things like, you tell me the dream or you're dead. And when he says that, that's exactly what's going to happen. He is a powerful figure. And yet, what do we read here? That he has a dream and he is messed up. It has been disturbing to him. It has caused his mind to be troubled. I had a dream one time. I mean, I'm old. I don't remember my dreams anymore, but there's a few that have kind of stuck with me. When I was coaching softball for the girls, Gabrielle and Andrea playing on a high school softball team, I got to know a lot of the girls. I was the assistant coach. I was always like hitting balls to them and playing catch with them and warming up and, you know, coaching first base and da-da-da, and you get to know them and their families. You know, because the moms and dads come to the games and all that kind of stuff. And I had this dream, one of these really vivid dreams, that one of the girls on the team died in front of me. And I had to go tell her dad. And I got to tell you, you want to talk about a disturbing dream. I woke up, I was agitated, sweating. I was like, oh my goodness, thank you, Lord, that was just a dream, you know? And that was not the kind of trouble that Nebuchadnezzar experienced in his dream. It was far greater. I'm just trying to like give you an example. Like that's a terrible thing to have a dream of. But it's not what was going on in Nebuchadnezzar. It doesn't scratch the surface. His soul was in turmoil. His inability to discern the dream revealed his insecurity and deepest fears about the future. That as strong as he was, he couldn't control it. And really didn't even know what it was going to be. So two things to consider here. First, interpreting heavenly signs and the mystery of dreams was of particular interest to pagan kings because they were all about the extension and longevity of their kingdoms. And they wanted to know what was coming so that they could lean into that and strategize and put the right people in control or whatever. And so they had no concept of a God who reigned over the future with certainty, right, and precision. They had all these local, you know, gods and were always trying to appease them and figure out what the signs meant of the seasons changing and things like that. So Nebuchadnezzar would then resort to magic and omens to discern his future. And you saw it. How many times did we read a list of wise men type people? And sorcerers and magicians and Chaldeans and all this kind of stuff, right? All of this is just different categories of sorcerers that tried to read the signs for the king. So that was the first thing to know. The second is that the king's mind was so disturbed that he was unable to sleep. Verse 1 says, his spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. You ever had that experience? You were so worked up about something you couldn't sleep? 2 years ago, in the middle of the summer, I went on an unparalleled stretch of sleeplessness. And I'm a guy that if we just be quiet right here for a minute, I could probably fall asleep if you just gave me a minute. I can sleep anywhere, anytime. And I went 5 nights without sleep. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I mean, the stress level was running so high. You ever had that kind of thing? Like, that's, I think it's greater what was going on in Nebuchadnezzar than what I'm describing for you. The psalmist wrote of this reality when God's deliverance from trouble is delayed, even for God's people. Listen to the words of Psalm 77, verse 4. You hold my eyelids open. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. Will the Lord never again be favorable? So the psalmist tries to capture this concept. I have an acquaintance that's a Michigan State Trooper, and he's really high up in like tactical training and things like that at the academy. He's a sharp shooter, and he's a really smart guy. He knows all about like hostage situations. And he told me one time, this was many, many years ago, there was a hostage situation in Dearborn on a motel on Michigan Avenue. I don't know if you guys remember. It's a long time ago. If I could remember the name of the hotel, maybe you'd remember it. The Peekaboo Hotel or something crazy like that, but motel. But anyway, it was a hostage situation. There was a gunman that had a couple of people holed up in this motel room. And the next morning we read, all is well. The cops killed the guy and rescued the hostages. And I was asking my friend about that. Like, I know nothing about how police approach hostage situations. And he said that they have it down to the minute. From when a hostage situation happens, they start running the clock because they know that once the criminal, the one that took the hostages, once they reach a certain level of time without sleep, they go crazy and kill themselves and the hostages. So they always bust through the door long before that threshold is reached. Because sleeplessness, it makes people crazy. So it just amps up perhaps what's already going on in a disturbed way in their spirit. Well, this is not unlike the condition of Nebuchadnezzar, and it explains his behavior in these verses. I mean, he's flying off the handle, isn't he? Like, he's in a rage here. You agree with me that that's what's going on in the text? I mean, he's hauling every... Who are the people that he's hauled in front of him? These wise men. Tell me who they are to him.
His advisors.
His advisors. His, you know how... What's the guy? Ahithophel? Is that the fellow's name? That betrayed David and went along with Absalom, right? That was his chief counselor. It hurt him, like, at a level that, you know what I'm trying to say? And these are not people that are being disloyal to the king. These are the king's boys. Hey, gets all his most valuable guys together and says, you're going down. And he's about to slaughter them. And he issues the command, right? And it's going to happen. And in fact, Daniel gets a knock on his door, because you remember who Daniel is to the king now, right? Remember last chapter? Look at the end of last chapter. 18. At the end of the time, that is the time of training Daniel and his three friends in the ways of Babylon, right? At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the end of the reign of King Cyrus. So the point is that Daniel and the other three, they're in this group that's about to be killed, even though the king himself has judged them 10 times better. And it seems that they don't even know about the situation. Like, that they weren't part of the group that was called in, because Daniel asks, you know, kind of what's going on here, right? I mean, did you see that little exchange? Where is that? I'm way off my notes at this point. Give me a second. Oh, yeah, here we go. So it's around verse 15. So look in the middle of the text there. Verse 15. So the decree went out, 13. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them, end of 13. 14, then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to the captain of the king's guard. And then 15, he declared to Arioch, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Right, so Daniel doesn't seem to know why he's about to be killed. And I say all of that just to say this, that Nebuchadnezzar is just in a sweeping rage at this point, right? It's not unlike in the book of Revelation, where the dragon is in the sky waiting for the child to be born. You remember that vision? And And as you go in that chapter, I think, is that chapter 12? I have it in my notes somewhere. We're going to say chapter 12. Your homework will be to prove whether or not I'm right by that reference this afternoon. But anyway, there's a war and heaven wins and Satan's thrown, cast down into the earth. And the end of that description is, even though he knows he is defeated, he's trying to take out as many people, bring about as much destruction as he can in the limited time that he has left. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar's acting kind of with that, you know, that sort of impression. He's got this idea, this vague notion that the future's not bright for him, but he can't lay his finger on it, and so he's just like taking people out. That's what happens when you don't have access to godly wisdom about the future. I mean, if you know, most people are whistling in the dark and have no care for the future, and they don't think about what's going to happen to them. But if they do, this is the logical conclusion of worrying about the future, but really having no access to wisdom about it, right? They turn to, you know, magicians and omens and different crazy things that can't predict the future and this sort of thing. Well, okay, so at this point, where Daniel brings into the story, he's the hinge, right? Because remember the conflict here is the king has a dream, he can't understand it, and all the wise men are going to get it. Why? Because nobody could possibly tell him what it means. It's too big of an ask. Even his own wise men say, only the gods would know. Remember that? No man dwelling with us in flesh. Okay, so let's move now to Daniel here. Notice the, I just wanted you to first notice the contrast. Man, I'm out of time, aren't I, almost? We'll have to pick this up next time. But notice the contrast between the king's response, right, and Daniel's response. How do you see Daniel responding in our text? We're down around 13 to 15, right in there, right? And what does he say after he says, why is this matter so urgent? 16, Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Now, there's no description here of Daniel being afraid for his life. I mean, there's just zero description. In fact, it's so matter of fact, it's kind of a boring telling of the story at this point. It's just so vanilla, right? I mean, imagine, right? Somebody's knocking at your door and you're about to get killed because you can't do whatever the king demands, right? I mean, imagine your reaction, right? The sweat and the maybe running to try to hide in the bedroom or whatever, get a weapon or whatever you might do, right? That's what we expect to see in this kind of narrative. And what we see is Daniel going like, why is the king so concerned? What's so urgent? Yeah.
It's like the fisherman in the boat and Jesus sleeping when he wakes up.
that's pretty good.
You know, yeah. That's what I thought of.
Oh, a storm? Why are you guys afraid? Don't you know I'm in the boat? Yeah, right. That's pretty good. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing is he asks for more time, right? Did you see that in 16? Think about this now. Think about the story. Verse 16, Daniel goes into the king and asks for some more time, right? When the king's in this kind of rage, do you want to go make a request of him? No way, right? But he does. And oh, by the way, when he asks for more time, does Daniel have any idea how he's going to fix this conflict? He doesn't know what the dream is yet. He doesn't know what the answer is yet. And yet, in confidence, because he knows that he has access to God's wisdom about the future, he's like, give me a minute. And what does he proceed to do? He goes to his friends and he asks them to pray that God would be merciful. Do you see that? Where is that? That's 17. Daniel goes to their house. 18, told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Why was he so confident that he wasn't going to get swept away with these wise men? Why?
Because
trust in God.
But yes, but put a little bit more meat on those bones. What would you point to that we already know in Daniel that would suggest to him that he ought to trust him? What did we learn last week?
Because of the way God had protected him in all the other times.
That's right. God had protected him and his friends in the siege of Jerusalem, right? Being transplanted into Babylon and being made to study all of the, you know, all of this Babylonian culture and literature and language and the way of the wise men and all that kind of stuff. And they come out as gleaming examples, even as they refuse to, what was the word in chapter 1? Sully, not, that's not the word. Make oneself not clean. What's the word?
Defile. Even
as they said, we won't defile ourselves, right? And so they remained faithful and wouldn't eat the king's food and wine and all of that. And yet all those things, they got favor from God so that Daniel did what? And his friends, so that they stood before the king. Because God had purposes for them in that position. You think that God was going to send a dream to Nebuchadnezzar and previously had given Daniel the ability to interpret dreams and that Daniel was going to get swept away with the wise men that couldn't interpret the dreams? Come on. I'm a dummy and I'd have confidence in that situation. Right? And so that's where we'll leave it. We'll wrap this little bit up at the beginning of next time and move forward. But here's the takeaway. This is what you want to hold on to. Are you fearful about the future? Are you somebody that's given to anxiety about what's coming, that sort of thing? Friends, if you have access to God's wisdom about the future, it controls you in the present. And that's a beautiful truth that we get today from this text. So God bless you. We'll see you in the service. Did anybody not get the email with the motions and the budget? I have a couple hard copies if you'd like. Got one more. Anybody want? Last chance. Do I just hit stop, Nan?